Ladies and gentlemen, the time has come to email us at ForgottenFailuresCast@gmail.com or visit ForgottenFailuresCast.com.
And I'll take you with me to the stars. They're gonna find Uranus on a mountain on Mars. On a mountain on Mars.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forgotten Failures. This is Mike.
And this is Daryl.
This is Lindsay.
And this is Mike. And this week's episode, we watched the movie Hollow Point from 1996.
Hollow Point.
Yes. And our goal on this podcast is to watch obscure movies, right?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Correct.
That's about the gist
of it. Obscure.
To be either out of print on DVD or not on DVD ever, or in this case, only available on one of those four movie sets on DVD.
The ones you get from Walmart at the bin for like four or $5.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Or Big Lots.
Those are magical bins, though.
No, there's some gems in those bins.
Yeah, so this one also had a movie called Dog Watch on it and something about an art heist. I don't know. I bet none of them were as good as this one.
No.
They all have very generic titles, but that's okay because Hollow Point has a generic title, but it's amazing.
Any movie could have been called Hollow Point.
Seriously.
And you know, the title is just as justified for this as if, you know, Lethal Weapon could have been called Hollow Point.
Yeah, any action movie with guns could be called Hollow Point.
But
no
movie
would have been this movie.
No.
No Hollow Point would have been this amazing movie.
Yeah. So this did not come out in theaters in America. It was released in Italy and France in July of 1996, whereas here in America, we were watching movies like Fled, The Frighteners, Kazam, Multiplicity, Joe's Apartment, and of course, Independence Day.
Joe's Apartment
came out,
Was that the one about all the cockroaches?
Yes, it was the MTV. It was like their first movie.
It was a big one, too.
Yeah.
It was huge.
And Shazam. Well, I understand why. I mean, it got beat out by Shazam. It's Shazam.
Oh, and Kingpin. Kingpin and Joe's Apartment were released the same week.
Goddamn, Kingpin's one of the best.
That's stiff competition to go up against.
And Jackie Chan's Super Cop. So that's a good week in July.
The Frighteners, you mentioned The Frighteners, too. That's a good
movie. Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's listed as a horror comedy. Kazam is listed as a family comedy. Multiplicity is listed as a sci-fi comedy. And Fled, much like this movie, is an action comedy.
No, this is an action thriller mystery comedy.
I wouldn't call it a mystery.
Internet calls it a mystery.
Yeah, it's a mystery as to why all of this is happening on film.
Yeah.
True.
Right. A lot of stuff happens in the plot, but it seems pretty easy to describe, probably.
Can you do it in a minute and a half?
You do it?
Yes, we'll try to do the plot summary in a minute and a half.
All right.
And okay, we start with Tia Carrere in a church getting married to some Russian guy. So as soon as she's about to say, I do, she instead has just been told by her groom who his father is. He's wearing a scarf, and she shoots the groom's father. And then, no, she doesn't shoot him. She handcuffs him, and then she runs out of the church. And the father turns out to be a Russian mobster, and quickly he gets together in the car of the other hero, Thomas Ian Griffith, who turns out to be some kind of other agent. Tia Carrere is an FBI agent.
1 minute remaining.
And Thomas Ian Griffith then kidnaps the Russian guy. Then the Russian guy ends up teaming up with an Italian guy, a Chinese guy, and John Lithgow to control the international crime trade. Meanwhile, Donald Sutherland is a hitman. He is the goofiest character in the movie, or in any movie. He spends the entire time kind of sneaking around and then basically he and Tia Carrere and Thomas Ian Griffith spend the entire movie double-crossing each other to try to get their hands on the money that was stolen by John Lithgow and all the criminals. And there are several Mexican standoffs. The plot is basically just that. Just people keep double-crossing each other. There's not that much to discuss in terms of the plot. But there's also the scene on the golf course. And eventually they end up in a warehouse. Thomas Ian Griffith has a lot of trouble getting into the warehouse, but Tia Carrere finds it very easy. And she convinces him to double-cross everybody, and then he convinces everybody else to double-cross everybody. And then Donald Sutherland drives away in a truck with all the money. The end.
All right.
Oh, that was perfect.
I don't know if that was perfect.
Well, come on.
But that was pretty good.
But can I tell you what is perfect?
What's that?
This movie.
Yes.
This movie.
It was pretty good.
This movie was amazing.
It does it for me on literally every level.
Every single level.
I don't know about the romance
part. Yeah.
The romance is so romantic.
Especially
who doesn't
want
to shoot at your love interest?
Yeah.
So
here's the thing. To sum that up in about a minute and a half is ridiculous because that movie is like just a series of tunnels.
This is it's a plot chowder. It is very thick. It's like plot.
Yeah, it's like a sewer system. Yeah. It just keeps going. And
which, by the way, there are some
other
sewer systems.
There are some.
This
sewers.
Is true. This is
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
I mean, all you need and to like, know about the criminal guys is that they team up and then they can't trust each other.
Yep.
Just
yep.
like in
yep.
every movie featuring
the,
more than
the
one
criminal
mob
guys
ever.
And the good guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Which brings us to what I think this movie really should have been called.
What's
which
that?
Is either triple crossed or maybe even push it to quadruple crossed.
Ooh, that's yeah. a good one.
Because I think Donald Sutherland presents quadruple cross.
Because that's pretty much all that happened in this movie was people double crossing each other left and right like crazy.
Yeah, I actually thought that it should have been called Donald Tungerlens.
What? What?
Gonna find your anus
what?
On a mountain on
oh,
Mars.
Oh yeah, that's his theme song. He's kind of a Bugs Bunny character.
And there's some good Donald Sutherland tongue
yeah,
in this
yeah.
movie.
In yeah, fact, if you really want to see Donald Sutherland's tongue, look no mm-hmm. further than Hollow Point.
And his huge grin as his teeth are all exposed as he grins like a madman throughout
there,
every scene.
Yeah,
there's probably
overjoyed
only two
with
scenes
how wacky
that he's
he
not
is.
Grinning.
Yeah, yeah.
Donald no. Sutherland is this movie. Mm-hmm. You know what? There are multiple actors yeah. in this movie that make it good.
Mm-hmm.
But Donald Sutherland was just absolutely yeah. always, a joy yeah. to watch.
Do you have an alternate title for the movie?
Oh, I think, well, because Donald Sutherland is so heavily featured, I think it should just be How to Become President of Pan Am in 10 Easy Steps.
Oh, very
or
nice.
10 Easy Betrayals, really.
Pan
very
Am?
Nice. What?
Step one.
That is step one.
Was that the point. Was that the name of that island they were going to found?
No,
the island
no, no.
nation?
That's, that is...
that was John Lithgow's
Hunger
island.
This is from the Hunger Games.
Oh.
He's President Snow.
Yeah.
So this is the yeah. first step that put him into being a psychotic person.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well,
that took
over a
world, I guess. Not
yeah.
Even
so
a
he took that trailer
yeah,
full of money
island,
and then
yeah.
just ruined the world.
Yeah. He yeah. went to that yeah. island and made Hunger Games. Like he made yeah. that world.
Well, I feel like
Games I've been double crossed too many times. It's time to send kids to fight each other.
Yeah. Well, that honestly sounds like the natural step for this character.
I'm pretty sure that
he would do
that.
Well, the Donald Sutherland character. Okay. Well, first I'll say my alternate title for the movie would be. Like National Lampoon's Mexican Standoff or something. Because really, this
perfect.
Is just as goofy and amusing as your average spoof movie.
Yeah.
All it's missing is the sight gags, really.
It's an action
and they
movie
even have
spoof.
A coffin falling out of the back of a car and rolling down the street for
yes.
sight gags.
Yeah, there's yeah. a Russian mm-hmm. gangster just rolling down the street in a coffin that's supposed to be meant for his son so he can mm-hmm. escape, you know.
Yeah.
Without
yeah.
the
yeah, his son is dead.
Yeah, this movie is a mix of it's a mashup of multiple movies.
Yes.
Yeah. One of which being in my opinion, Rat Race.
Okay.
Because
yes.
they're racing after basically money for their own departments. There's the DEA is involved in this.
Yeah.
Kind of
maybe.
and the FBI is also involved
yeah.
in
Tia
this.
Tia Carrere, our hero, is an FBI agent. Thomasine Griffith, her love interest.
Yep.
The smarmy guy who keeps wearing a knit cap.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is a DEA agent.
Or so he says.
And then there's the police Ooh. Who basically just kind of drive around and threaten people and then immediately leave.
I don't know if you guys have ever been to Boston, but I assume they had like more attentive cops than maybe this movie shows.
Yeah.
Most cops just kind of show up to show you that cops exist and then they leave. There's only one cop in the whole movie who does any kind of like cop mm-hmm. stuff.
Mm-hmm. Any copping?
Oh, yeah.
The one who arrests Donald Sutherland for what
crashing into his car.
Oh, that's
yeah.
right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
He did the old
that's
window tap.
Yep.
Sir, you been drinking?
Can't find the extra's name, but that's the second best actor.
That's true. And yeah, so basically the two main characters, Tia Carrere, mm-hmm. Not her name in the movie.
Her name in the movie is Diane.
Yes.
Although the IMDb plot summary calls her Susan.
And her
lead singer of Crucial Taunt.
Yep.
Clearly you can tell it matters.
Yeah. Cassandra, as we all know and love her.
And the main character, Max Parrish.
Yes.
Who,
oh,
by the way.
Name. Yeah, Max yep. Parrish.
Max
Parrish. By the way, Parrish, not spelled like Parrish, you know, like church Parrish.
Yeah.
Parrish, like you're going to die.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's a typo.
That's what it says in the credits.
Whatever.
Yep. So so these two characters are from different agencies. They're trying to basically make this big bust on this cartel, this sort of group of mobsters. It's not
well,
really
think,
explained.
Are they trying to bust John Lithgow's cartel?
Yeah.
They don't really care about all these multicultural ethnic stereotype gangsters.
No.
But
no.
John Lithgow is trying to team up the multicultural ethnic stereotype gangsters, the
yeah.
Italians, the Chinese, and the
Russians.
They're
Russians.
Going after the great white shark.
Yeah,
they
he's
don't really
doing
care
this whole,
about much else.
Yeah, it's like the Justice League of international criminals.
So the federal agencies are trying to go through the different international criminals to get to John Lithgow, play
yeah.
a guy named Livingston.
Yeah. And because they both are citing, I forget what act it was.
Asset Forfeiture Act, I think.
Yes. They're both citing this Asset Forfeiture Act because they want to be the one person to bust John Lithgow's character in order to seize the money for their department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're both kind of, they're just doing their jobs for their department, but they're taking it very personally.
Yes.
They're very serious about their work.
So personally, they're like going after these gangsters themselves. Like there is no one, there's no backup.
Mm-mm.
When they do call backup, it's just regular police. Like the FBI calls in backup and it's just like, you know, the Boston PD shows up, they say hi, and then they leave.
Yeah.
The FBI is at the first sting set up.
Yes, this is true.
Yes.
In the very beginning.
Dressed up as like homeless people.
Yeah,
and
because Tia Carrere tries to get the Russian mobster by marrying his son.
Yeah, the only way the Russian mobster would ever set foot in America is to go to his son's wedding.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Tia Carrere spent who knows how many years getting him to fall in love with her.
Yeah, seriously, that's a pretty deep undercover.
A long con.
Yeah, that's some Serpico shit.
The son of an international gangster. I can't imagine he's just like, hey, we met at this bar last night. You want to get married?
Yeah. Maybe he was. Yeah, I don't know. Who knows?
Well, his character's pretty flat. He dies like 10 minutes into the movie.
It doesn't really matter though, because that's not the movie.
Yeah, she's got to be pretty dynamite in bed or something to get this guy to.
Well, she has Tia Carrere.
That's true.
Yeah.
She has a really good JTT haircut in this movie too. It's amazing.
This is possibly the least sexual Tia Carrere has ever been in a movie.
Yeah. She's all about her business.
Very short hair.
She's buying all her clothes from L.L. Bean.
I mean, she calls herself
being
a career woman, and she totally is.
She's wearing the shoulder pads in 1997, which is
She's got like the Friends Rachel haircut. I think. I think it looks pretty similar.
Yeah.
And outside of the one scene at the end where she's all busted up to, I don't know if she's like trying to coerce people to do something or something.
Yeah,
but she's definitely
meeting with the Italian.
She's trying
to seduce.
That's what it was.
Terribly acted Italian gangster guy.
But these characters are basically trying to get this money for their department, and they're doing a really bad job at it. Everybody is essentially doing a really bad job at all of their jobs. The mobsters, John Lithgow, Donald Sutherland's the only person who's doing a good job.
So it's the only person who does any kind of real job, and this is an interesting point because we just found this out before we started recording. When you first get introduced to Donald Sutherland's character, he's hitting on Tia Carrera's friend, wingman, whatever she is.
Yep.
Her name was Vicky.
Oh, Vicky.
I didn't know she had a name.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So he comes up to her and offers her a bunch of money to dance with him because he's an old man and, you know, she's such a pretty young thing.
It was a bet.
It was a bet, you know.
Yeah. Like a really convoluted story to get her to dance.
Either way, he flashed her $500, which usually screams, hey, I'd like to pay for you for sex.
Yeah.
But for this reason, it was just dancing.
You know, it's a very
crowded club. She thought
it was
cute. She found it intriguing.
Yeah, because, you know, nothing's more intriguing than, hey, here's a bunch of money. You want
to
dance with
me? To be fair, it was a pretty lame club.
Yeah, they were playing, like, it wasn't even polka, but it looked like polka because there was a guy with an accordion.
It was like music they would play in, like, the Montmartre in Paris in 1920 or something.
Yeah.
It was like gypsy accordion music.
Yeah.
You know when, like, fake bands, you know, pretend to do, like, a rap song in, like, classical style? That actually sounded like what they were trying to do. Like,
it was very
really
upbeat.
Know
a lot of
what
violence.
They were doing.
Like the band of Mos Eisley or something.
Yeah, so our Tia Carrere's conversation with her friend was interrupted by Max Parrish showing up to, like, negotiate with Tia Carrere. And her friend is, like, insulted. And then Donald Sutherland starts hitting on her. And then she gets interested again.
Yep.
But it turns out that Donald Sutherland has been hired to kill her with poison.
And he tells her that he's an assassin.
Yeah.
He's upfront about it.
Yeah, she asks him if he's a dance instructor, and he says, no, I'm an assassin.
And he's not just any assassin. He's a bored assassin. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Killing people is so boring.
He's the most jaded person.
Yes.
He's just so bored with everything.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about it out loud, like, this should be exciting.
Yes.
Because I'm doing this out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
This should be exciting that I'm killing this woman.
Yeah.
He talks to himself a lot.
No.
In crowded rooms, he talks to himself a lot.
Yeah.
About killing people. Needless to say, his assassination attempt on this random woman is successful.
It is a success.
But it seems at one point, we were watching the movie.
Yeah.
It seemed like maybe he was hired to kill Tia Carrera's character.
That would make sense. Because
which is what makes sense. Because this other woman has, she's nothing.
No one.
She's just a random woman.
This is her first scene. She talks to Tia Carrera.
And that's it.
Yeah, because Donald Sutherland is just your average kind of low-level hitman, I guess. And John Lithgow hired him to kill Tia Carrera's friend.
Yeah,
not to kill Tia Carrera.
And what was her deal in it? Was she in the FBI too, maybe? I don't know.
They didn't make it seem like she was in the FBI.
No, it did not seem
like
she had no background.
Cop shop, and she left.
Yeah, she had no background. She was just there to die.
Just a random plot device.
Yeah. I just think it would have been too hard to kill Tia Carrera because she's so smart. So you get to her, you hurt her by killing her friend.
This is true.
As revenge for Tia Carrera screwing up his whole thing with the Russian mobsters.
I guess so.
By the way, this is probably way more thought than the actual scriptwriter put
into it. I want to know.
Yeah. Get into it. I want to know your theory. We already explored.
Yeah.
So Donald Sutherland is just laughing like a madman in a lot of his scenes here. Like, he is really not bored at all in this movie. You know, he is the biggest star in the movie.
Yeah.
They managed to get him for this direct-to-video movie filmed in Canada.
I think he's just gone a little bit insane with his, like, nihilistic, like, surrealist sort of, like... outlook on life.
But that was John Lithgow who was giving the weird speeches about like cosmic balance and stuff.
Yeah,
but Donald Sutherland wasn't doing that.
Donald Sutherland was living it.
he was living the life.
Yeah.
After he assassinates, I guess that's what assassins
do.
Tia Carrera's friend, he then runs away.
Yeah. Well, he stays there looking at the scene, and then as soon as Tia Carrera realizes that her friend is dead, she looks at Donald Sutherland, and he like runs through the curtain like a cartoon character.
Yeah,
he does the Bugs Bunny. He scurries through this curtain.
Yeah, you've never seen anyone scurry. Watch this movie. You'll see some great scurrying.
There's a lot of cartoonish acting in this movie.
Mostly by Donald Sutherland.
Like, overact. Yes. Like, yeah. And even, like, all the extras are, like, super athletic whenever they're shot, whenever they're doing anything. Getting out of the way, they're doing, like, somersaults.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Everything is overacted physically.
Like, people get shot in the stomach and they do backflips until they fall on the ground and die in dramatic fashion.
They get shot over cars. Like, from standing on the ground, they'll get shot and fly over a vehicle.
Yeah.
Cartoonish is the only way to explain it.
Exactly.
Being like a movie from the 90s, you know, it's an action movie. There's lots of guns, lots of shooting, lots of weird guns, like, you know, like World War II Stigs. I don't know why anyone even has those, but whatever. To make up for, like, this is a strange case because it's, you know, the 90s, but there is no blood in this movie.
Nope. Mm-hmm.
There is not a single drop of blood.
I didn't notice that. And you know
what? They make up for it by somersaulting over cars when shot
with explosions.
Shotguns,
And the fact that they go to a strip club and there's no nudity or anything.
No.
And I don't even know if there's any cursing because even at the end when he says something like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
He says gosh.
Gosh! I'd have two more guns if I wasn't such a nice guy.
So this was probably like a PG-13 movie. Like,
might have been directed. It might have been a TV movie, but
That's funny when you mention that. I didn't even pick that up with the blood.
There's not any gore in the movie. Nothing
blood,
like that.
No gore, it's nudity,
which totally brings this to a whole different level.
But the death toll in this movie has to be so high.
Yeah.
So many people die.
Like after the church scene, as soon as Tia Carrera runs out of the church with her future father-in-law as the hostage, like all these. You know, gunmen just jump out of the church and do the whole blasting away at random thing as soon as they go through the door.
Yeah. You know, when I go to a wedding, I usually try to pack my 9 and my AK-47 because, you know, just in case.
Well, that's what they show
off.
You in the very beginning. Yeah. They're coming into this wedding before you realize it's a wedding. People are walking in. Mm-hmm. They're getting searched. There's
a metal detector.
And there's a table for people's guns to hold the guns.
There's about 50 guns
at the door.
Yeah, which was my favorite moment of the whole movie.
Really? I don't believe it.
The bar got set real high in this movie. We walked in, and they're doing metal detectors, and there's just a table with nothing but guns and AK-47. This movie's going to be interesting.
I had a question about the, because the whole wedding was a sting operation for the FBI.
Yeah.
It's a gigantic, like, Catholic wedding. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, huge church. And, you know, Tia Carrera's character has, her side of the aisle is full of family.
There?
But they have to all be hired. Yeah. They hired a bunch of Asians.
Maybe it was a real family.
Maybe, but how confusing would that have been for everybody if you're hired or family?
Yeah.
What the hell day that these people had must have been so confusing.
Yes.
I mean, every other person's going through the metal detector and, you know, pulling out a Glock or something. They're just like, what do you got? Well, I got some tweezers and some, like, crackers and stuff.
And her family's cool with
nunchucks.
This. Like, yeah, I guess
nunchucks.
We're...
Nunchucks.
I guess we're walking into a wedding with guns on the table.
That's okay.
That's cool.
Like, oh,
we're just glad she's getting off the table.
Okay, it was a sting operation.
You know?
It was a sting operation. All those people were FBI agents.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Okay, so after Donald Sutherland scurries through that curtain... what happens then?
Oh, well...
do we have to go through the plot?
No, I'm just saying, apparently, like, this dance club with the gypsy accordion music is on, the 20th floor of an apartment building.
Yeah.
As soon as they run out of the club, they run down about 20 flights of stairs, all the while Donald Sutherland is shooting explosive blow darts at
her. Basically, all of, like, the chase scenes are ridiculous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel that this movie should also be called fantasy. I feel like it should be listed under fantasy because any of the weapons, including people's fists... Mm-hmm. are not, like, there's nothing, there's no realism to it.
Yeah, the punching sounds are so loud in this movie. Yeah.
Everybody gets knocked out.
Yeah, it's like a psychopath or like a sociopath wrote and directed
it's
this
like
movie.
It's like a seven psychopaths in its realism. Or a shoot 'em up.
They have weapons that people in the mob, the FBI, would not have.
Yeah.
Like, they use weapons that aren't used in anything.
Like a German Stig.
Yeah.
This gun isn't even made anymore.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of them.
Yeah. And everything, like the mob's acting in broad daylight, the FBI is acting in broad daylight.
Everything, I think, happens in daytime. I don't think there was one night scene
with
at all.
Gigantic explosions.
Which is a nice touch. You know, nothing's obscured by the night.
Yeah, good lighting.
You get to see those explosions in all their glory.
Yeah.
But it does make it strange when they leave this odd polka club, because you realize it's like afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's in broad daylight, too.
They're in a nightclub, and it's like 3 p.m.
Yeah, they go out on the street, and they're just like, you know, people going to work, people taking their kids to school.
Smoky, sultry nightclub.
Yeah, let's go to the strip club at 3 in the afternoon.
I had a little bit of a problem understanding, and maybe it's my fault for wanting
No, it's your fault for trying to understand.
For thinking that there should be a reason people do things, you know?
No.
But these mobsters, so they're talking about how they need to, they're kind of stuck because they have all of this cash, this really fake looking cash.
They're like, you, Italian guy, you control all this stuff in Japan. No. You, Chinese guy, you control all this stuff in Italy.
Yep. So they have all this cash, and they're complaining to John Lithgow that, you know, they can't do anything with it because they can't launder it. But John Lithgow explains, like, to somebody, you have, like, the largest airline in some place.
Yeah.
And you have, like, the largest hotel chain in. They have places to launder this money, and they have legit money coming in through real businesses.
Exactly.
What is their problem?
Yeah, you own an airport. Just fly the plane around.
Yeah,
I don't know. Say you sold 100 tickets and just fly the plane around and then just slam back down.
There's so many
not
ways.
That big
so,
a deal.
No. So, but John Lithgow's solution is amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He suggests to get a bank, but the only way to buy a bank is to own a country.
Yep.
And so he suggests.
He's really the idea. He's really the ideas man.
Yeah, yeah.
They should all buy an island, which they're angry about. They're very angry about the
idea.
Yeah,
they got to spend my unlaundered millions on an island.
Yeah.
Rich people problems,
as if I need another island.
One thing that I don't understand, John Lithgow explains, he like tries to reason that in order to buy a country or start a country, you need cash.
Yeah.
Like, that's the reason.
Yeah, that's the way you buy an island.
Yeah.
Well, that was
cash.
The thinking behind, like, when William Walker took over Nicaragua, like, 180 years ago. It doesn't work that way now.
I guess he's just a big fan of history.
Yeah.
And they said they're going to buy an island that I think they described as an offshoot of Tahiti.
Yeah.
Like a peninsula or something.
Yeah. That whole scene was just ridiculous. I think I tuned out most of that.
Yeah,
it was just like, this is even worth
following. Yeah, all that talking.
Already,
at that
I think
point,
the director did the same thing.
Yeah, it doesn't even make sense. It's just filler.
Yeah, so John Lithgow is this criminal mastermind, and all the other gangsters are like...
He's barely in the movie, though, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Lithgow?
Yeah, he doesn't make a huge impression, either.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
until the warehouse.
Well, every scene, he appears to be about 9 inches taller than anybody else in the scene. I mean, he is 6'4", but he is... like two heads taller than the Chinese gangster guy.
I mean, he towers over the Italian guy too. He just is clearly the most intimidating person.
Yeah. Have you ever seen the TV show The Blacklist? Like, he is basically what's his name? God,
haven't seen
Stargate,
it.
Dude.
What's his name? The guy from The Blacklist.
Oh, that one.
Jim.
No.
Yep.
John.
James Spader. He is the exact same character as James Spader on The Blacklist.
Yeah,
he has these same grand schemes, and he like spends all of his time manipulating people against each other, and then manipulating people to be with each other, and then manipulating them against each other again.
Well, this whole movie is about manipulation and double crossing. Mm-hmm. What we should have done is take count of all the double crosses that happen.
Yeah.
They're probably over 20. That is a conservative estimate.
I was going to say
there's sometimes 20 within scenes.
Yes.
Sometimes just within seconds, there are like triple crosses all over the place.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
Like Tia Carrere and Max, is that his name, Parrish? They double cross each other multiple times just in a conversation.
Like in a sentence, they're like double crossing each
other. One time they show up at Donald Sutherland's apartment, and apparently he gets there a few seconds before she does, and he gets the special information off Donald Sutherland's answering machine, and then Tia Carrere steals the piece of paper that he has and runs off.
Yeah.
And then he like fools her into being handcuffed to the nightstand somehow, and then he runs off.
Which is really a strange scene because these are two like law enforcement officials. They've broken into this man's house.
Well,
he's an assassin. They're looking at all the assassin shit he has in his house, and he's just like, you know what? I'm going to handcuff you to this nightstand. I guess when he comes back, he's going to kill you too.
Yeah.
So I guess you can see your friend later.
Oh, Max has gone rogue many, many years ago.
Yeah. It turns out that he was actually let go from the DEA, and he's been a vigilante ever since. He was the literal rogue guy in the leather jacket. He was the cool, cracking jokes. He has lots of one-liners.
He takes a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
like, this is morphine. These are my amphetamines. They cancel out the morphine.
And he just carries around a bag of pot.
Yeah. And he tucks in his sweater.
Oh, yeah.
So let's not forget about that.
And then this becomes kind of a poignant moment when they found out the reason he quit the DEA was that he had severe spinal injuries, which is why he takes morphine all the time. And they put him at a desk job, and then he quit.
Yep.
That's, so then you feel a little of sympathy for this smarmy jerk.
Yeah, because, I mean, at first this is kind of like, you know, early 90s trying to show you this guy's a real hard-ass cop. Mm-hmm. He's really cool. He's doing all these drugs and stuff, man. Super awesome. He's like Johnny Depp in Fear and Loathing.
Yeah.
But really not. He's kind of just the same exact person he would be if he didn't do drugs.
He's just trying to get by. And there are so many good scenes in this
What did you think of the strip club scene?
The strip club scene was amazing and uncomfortable and hilarious.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because there's this, and this is where it becomes like a Gigli thing, right?
Yeah.
Where
Max shows up at the strip club, and then, like, in all the other scenes, Tia Carrera shows up, like, 30 seconds later, huffing and puffing.
Yeah.
And then
the rat race of this movie.
Yeah. And she, like, they have this conversation. They the bartender, who's also the owner of the strip club, apparently, Lacey.
Yeah, Lacey.
Barmaid. Yeah, she's
also looks like
them.
A character from 1920s Paris.
Yeah, and she's like, ooh, like, we don't see this often, meaning a woman in a strip club. And so they have this conversation with Max, and it's made out to seem like Tia Carrere might be into women.
Yeah, she spends all this time talking about how much better women are at stimulating women.
That's the thing, is I think there's a coded conversation that's going on there where... because they're both trying to speak to somebody to get information, right?
Yeah, they're trying to get information on Garrett.
Yeah, they're trying to get information on him, and he makes some sort of crack about how, you know, he's trying to say that he should be the one to do it because he's going to be better at it. And she's like, no, like, women are better at this kind of stuff. And he's like, why? And so she goes into this conversation where it begins with her explaining how women do things better, but it becomes this really weird, like, erotic monologue. Very erotic, where she's like... whispering, like whisper moaning almost.
Yeah,
it's like they touch every part of your
body. And at the same time,
like a man
they're
would
like
never
size.
Touching the baby hairs in front of your eyes.
And... says nipple a lot. Yeah. Yeah. And in the background, there's some strippers that are fully, well, not fully clothed, but clothed.
As clothed.
They're
as
wearing bikinis.
Yeah. Bikinis.
Way more clothed than normal strip clubs.
Yeah.
I don't think her whole, like, lesbianism, Gigli-esque monologue had anything to do with, like, the plot.
No.
I think it was just, like, because this movie was basically like the Lethal Weapon style buddy cop comedy movie, but it also came out after Pulp Fiction. So it also includes a lot of, like, pointless banter between the leads, which is supposed to be, like, original and unexpected, and one of those, and, like, semi-edgy. One of those edgy things is, like, her trying to convince him that she's a lesbian.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I don't buy it.
And then just to make sure that, you know, the audience knows that she's really not a lesbian, after Max Parrish says he wants to meet Donald Sutherland's character to sell him weed, like, in a half-baked idea that he thinks is going to work.
He says he's going to sell him some smoke.
Oh, yeah, some smoke. Got some smoke for you, Donald Sutherland. Well, he leaves, and this other stripper comes from the back, who I guess is more inclined to Tia Carrera's character, but Tia wants us to all know that she is not playing for that team.
No.
So she assaults this woman, I guess.
And it's an ugly old stripper, too. Like, she's worn. She's
kind of
worn. Mannish. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like
she has, like, a fro, but she's white.
She looked like she might have been from, like, the 70s or early 80s.
Yeah. Well, her hair did.
She's worn.
Yeah, she was from one of those, like, exploitation movies with a lot of bikers in them.
Yeah.
Played by actress Penny Mancuso, by the way. Her name was Sequin.
Yeah, Sequin.
And somehow,
that was a really good stripper name.
So pretty.
You know, because, like, a lot of time you see a strip club in movies and you're thinking, these women are fully clothed. This is totally unrealistic. Now, this movie, they were actually stripping. But what was unrealistic was that one of the strippers was this really mannish woman who was apparently kept in the back to appeal to lesbians if a lesbian ever came in.
I guess,
Well, they weren't really stripping, but they were almost naked.
Yeah, they were just dancing.
It's not like they were fully clothed, like when Jessica Alba was a stripper in that one movie.
Well, hey, it was like 2 in the afternoon, so I guess
that's
they figured,
yeah,
you know,
this is the day
we haven't quite got the bridge and tunnel crowd yet. So.
Yeah, another thing that didn't, like, for the majority of this movie, outside of the strip club, there's a fight because Tia Carrere pulls a needed car part out of his vehicle.
Distributor cab, right?
Yeah.
She was like, oh, what's wrong with your car?
Yeah.
Distributor cab problem?
Yeah, so she pulls it out, and he's angry, and he's like, he shoots her tire, and deflates her tire, and then shoots at her, like, at, like, her person.
This is, like, in the afternoon.
Yeah.
There are
daylight.
Cars
daylight.
Crowded going
parking
around.
Lot.
Yeah. There are people in the parking lot.
There are actually people coming out of the strip club who are watching this man shoot at another woman.
Well, he shot this tire, and then he shot one of the seats in the car.
He shot the spare tire.
Oh, I thought he shot one of the seats in the car.
So well, it had a cover over it. It had like the interior cover over it.
Oh, that's what that was.
But it was like close to her head, though.
Because he got a spare, and she opened the thing, and then shot the spare.
Yeah, and so while he had his gun drawn, he got her in a headlock and was trying to talk her down about how we need to do this together. There are people leaving the strip club just kind of looking over.
And he punches her like square in the stomach. And they don't even care. They're just like, eh, whatever. Yeah. She probably owed him some money or something.
Earlier, she had punched him a couple times with even louder punch sound
effects.
That's true.
And this is actually, this came out around the same time as Kingpin. Oh. This was reminiscent of the scene.
Yep, July of 1996.
Where she fights.
She punches in the boobs.
But yeah, she punches, or the lady in Kingpin gets punched in the boobs. Very reminiscent because there's like same, but this one happens in broad daylight. Yeah.
I feel like this movie was probably written a lot prior or a lot before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it actually came out, and then Pulp Fiction came out. They're like, oh, let's throw some of that in there. And then something else came out, and they're like, let's throw some of that in there.
So they threw in all these.
It was one of those scripts that just got like convoluted and convoluted.
So in addition to all the pop culture-ish banter, they threw in all these scenes where they're just like shooting guns at each other as if it's a toy.
They actually might be toys.
Yeah. You know, like they did in Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
These two federal agents, one an ex-federal agent, they shoot guns at each other as like a funny, like... almost a playfully mean.
Yeah, it's basically like foreplay.
Yeah, basically, it's like it's.
She
like
shoots him, and he flies over the top
it's
of.
Like
I think it was
high velocity
over the Jeep
foreplay,
Cherokee.
Basically, yeah.
Like Yosemite Sam shooting at the ground, saying dance.
It's like playing dead arm with a friend, but with a gun.
Yeah.
Essentially, what they're doing.
Yeah, it's wacky and it's out of control.
Yeah, but they're federal agents. Like like I can imagine him being unhinged. Mm-hmm. But she really should go under, like, she should probably be tested.
Yeah, she had, like, she had internet FBI in her house.
Yeah.
In 1997.
The tech in this movie is superb.
Oh, yeah.
Superb.
She has two computer monitors
in
her
apartment. Yeah, she has dual monitors in 1997, and she has FBI chat.
Yeah, so she needs to be a little more mature than she is.
Yeah, I would think so. She has a sweet apartment.
She's been undercover with those Russians for so long, and now the whole thing has blown up. I mean, I think she's just kind of cracked and...
maybe. Unhinged.
But yeah, like you said, Serpico. You know, she can't go back into civilian life again.
Yeah.
Like, I think one of the things that, like, really bothers me, and clearly these two officers of the law are completely
unhinged.
Are
made for each other. Yeah. Oh, sorry, are unhinged.
But like... They're in Boston, and that you eventually kind of figure out that this is Boston, or at least some close.
Yeah, the cop cars say Boston.
So we're assuming.
Although this may be the only movie set in Boston that has not a single person trying to do a Boston accent in it.
Not even one.
What happens when you shoot a Boston movie in Montreal, I guess.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's what happens when you have a bunch of Canadians.
Well, the guy who played the Russian was from England.
Yes.
Why not get a Russian? He was not good at all.
Yeah, no,
he was one of the worst.
Yeah. He was boring on screen.
Yeah, yeah.
He was very Mr. Magoo-like. Him was the Italian gangster
the other...
who might be the worst actor in the movie.
Yeah, I looked up this guy, Carl Alacchi, who plays the Italian gangster, and I thought he had like one credit, and he's got like 100. No, 71 credits. He was in The Terminal. He was in The Day After Tomorrow. I have to guess he had no more than one line in any movie except this one.
In all these movies?
He has to be. He did a thing like, pretend that you're doing like the peace sign, right?
Yeah.
But point it like horizontally.
Yeah.
Almost. Is that an Italian thing?
Yeah, keep your fingers spread out. I feel like this was like an aggressive like Three Stooges move.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to poke your eyes out thing.
Yeah,
it was like his hand was a really angry snake and he really wanted to show off how angry it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it wasn't fang-like. It was more like...
Pointed straight to your eyes.
Yeah, it is the poking in the eye thing.
Like when you do the two eyes at your eyes and then the two eyes at their eyes.
Yeah, like I'm watching you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they're at it like a battle. Like there's a battle royale in this scene.
Oh, yeah.
Or in this movie.
It's a multi-ethnic throwdown.
If you remember, if you ever watched Anchorman.
And who hasn't?
And who hasn't? Where all of the Anchorman come together in like a back alleyway type place.
Yeah, with the fire and the axes.
And with all their own weapons and stuff. That's exactly what happens, but with all the mob guys.
Yeah.
That is exactly what happens.
They show up at this warehouse.
Yeah.
You know, first the Russians show up, and you know they're all angry and
talking to John Lithgow and whatever.
And then the Chinese gangsters show up. By the way, you see the Chinese gangsters a lot, but they always change their hair. Their hairstyle is just constantly changing.
You see the guys with the flat. You see the guy with like the high and tight haircuts. Then the next scene, the Chinese gangsters have super long ponytails.
Well, that's what you get.
Then
when
they
have
like slicked back hair.
And they have a huge blowout.
You mean the guy with John Travolta's hair from Pulp Fiction?
No, not that guy.
The guy who looks like John Lovitz with Vincent Vega's hair. Yeah. That guy was one of the Italian gangsters.
Yeah. Oh, you don't mess with that guy.
I met the two Chinese twins who had their two Chinese twin hairstyles with their German assault rifles that they don't make.
Yeah.
That's just what happens when you have, you know, thousands of years of culture. You have multiple hairstyles to choose from.
Yeah. And they're gangsters. They don't give a fuck.
And they
didn't
show up
whatever.
Late. I think they were just trying to change their hair like Do you think it looks good if I'm like, tied up in the ponytail, yeah. or do you think I should just leave it go?
Should I do it all up, half up, not up?
What do you think? Like AK-47 and ponytail or two Glocks?
Yeah.
They probably just had a dartboard.
Hang out.
How about two
A dartboard of hairdos, and then they just threw it and like, oh, that's what I'm wearing.
Yeah. Pigtails, Glocks. Let's do it.
Pigtails and Glocks. Yep.
So Max Parrish, like all smarmy, cool, tough
Leather
guys in these movies,
guys.
He has a quirk. And his quirk is that he carries around a boombox and likes to sing opera.
Yeah. There's also
he sings opera.
There's also a really great scene.
Are you going to talk about doing the donuts scene?
No. There's a scene in Tia Carrera's house when they have Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
And he's eating a sandwich. Yeah. So there's multiple layers to this scene.
Yeah, I think the sandwich conversation was the most Pulp Fiction-y conversation.
Yeah. Oh, Max has a sandwich that he's eating. And he asks Tia Carrera if she has any mustard. And Donald Sutherland chimes in, and he just says, mayonnaise. Your choice in sandwich spreads is wrong.
You don't put mustard on that sandwich, asshole.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so they go, yeah. Tia Carrera and Max go into the kitchen to have a conversation, leaving Donald Sutherland just alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know.
Because he hasn't tried to escape multiple times at this point.
Yeah.
But they have this long, stupid conversation that's very Pulp Fiction-y, and at the end of it, Max throws out his sandwich. He tosses it and then tells Tia Carrera, I'll go deal with Donald Sutherland while you make me another sandwich.
Yeah.
And she does.
She does.
She starts to. She's like, okay.
And that brings up a point where it's like, there's some double crossing going on there. Yeah. And you know what's crazy is like, no matter how many times there was double crosses, I was still kind of surprised every time.
Really?
I was like you expect it, but then you're like, really? Again?
Because there's no like telling the audience. Like, there's no like, they don't try to make the audience aware of anybody's intention.
It's like everyone's a schizophrenic. It's like, oh, I'm on the good side. Oh, fuck it. I'm going bad.
You know, a lot
I'm
of times
this.
When you're a movie audience, you know, you're in on the joke a lot of times. Yeah. You're in on the ruse. But this movie, no one's in on shit. No one knows what's going on. Ever.
I mean, yep. John Lithgow is obviously not going to get this private island. He's probably been lying about that. Nobody knows what anybody's goals are.
Yeah. So while I really like the sandwich scene, and that was like a that was like a very very tough competitor for my number one moment. that really kind of is tied.
Yeah.
I should say that my favorite, the best moment for me, was the jail scene when Max gets himself inside of the jail.
Yes.
And he's trying to have a conversation with Donald Sutherland, who's in the next cell, because they're sort of open cells.
Donald Sutherland is in one cell, and Max is in the other cell with some Asians.
And they're,
they're like, let's stick him with those Asians.
And they're having a conversation, but at the same time, Max is having like this kung fu fight scene with the Asians.
Yeah, it's like in the Ninja Turtles or something.
Yes.
Yeah, it's like straight out of Ninja Turtles. Clan.
Like they're just chatting with each other with big smiles on their
faces. Like lots of roundhouses, lots of high kicks.
Meanwhile, in the background, he's like fending off this guy who's trying to attack him.
Whoa!
Yeah, that's the best part is when like before they kick, they're like, whoa! And then it's a kick.
Yeah.
Or, and then there's like a takedown.
It's like just a warning that you're going to get kicked. So be prepared.
Well, my favorite moment I think was when they were leaving the police station that had just been blown up with a rocket-propelled grenade, and the Russians then fire another rocket-propelled grenade at our heroes, and Donald Sutherland starts jumping up in the air in glee, chanting guns, guns, guns.
Yeah, he is so stoked that people are just like gunning each other down.
Yep, and Max Parrish,
$1 million smile, just screaming guns, guns,
and then
guns,
Max Parrish picks up his gun and shoots the grenade as it comes to him, and it blows
mid-air.
Up in midair,
which took five mid-air. Mississippis to go across a street.
These were the slowest rocket propelled grenades on strings.
Like he blew it up as it was coming to him in midair.
Yeah.
And then Donald Sutherland went, wow,
wow. Your own Patriot missile system.
Get back in the car.
You couldn't even do that in GoldenEye, like when you were shooting grenades at. You couldn't shoot the grenade
out
of the air.
The previous second, Donald Sutherland was trying to sneak away Mr. Magoo style, like he's always doing.
And then
after the grenade gets blown up, suddenly he just hops into the car with the other guys and
he's
drives
like, cool,
away.
Let's go.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got it. You got the
You won
the
me
moves.
Over.
You're
he's
on my team.
At this point.
You shot that grenade out of the air. You're on my team now, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my favorite part, which I mentioned earlier, was obviously the gun table at the wedding, which that whole wedding scene was just insane. Just from the guns on the table to when Tia Carrera confesses, I guess, that she's a cop. She pulls her dress up, and she's wearing tennis shoes.
Yeah.
Like, no one noticed that she had just, like, white tennis shoes
they were hidden
on,
under her dress.
Down the aisle.
She had no one in her bridal party, apparently.
Yeah.
No one helped her dress.
Yeah. They weren't even like clean tennis shoes. They'd been worn. They were worn in Nikes.
And for a second, before I knew what the movie was really about, I thought it was like a Runaway Bride situation.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was
thinking.
Because
that's actually the cover from Runaway Bride.
Yeah.
And maybe they stole it from this movie.
So she spends at least 5 seconds like fumbling around under her various skirts to get her little bitty gun out so she can hold this guy hostage.
That was ridiculous. And then what do you got for your favorite, Daryl?
Oh, I think my favorite scene has to be... there's a scene, again, all of this stuff happens in broad daylight, because this happens more than once, where our two main characters decide that they want to solve their problems by shooting each other in the chest.
Oh, my God.
I think my favorite scene is when Tia Carrera decides she has had enough of Max's nonsense, and she's just going to shoot him in the chest. By the way, her stance in shooting is hilarious.
Yes.
It is never... She is the... queen of close your eyes and shoot a point.
Yep.
It's just hilarious.
And close your eyes and turn away from the person you're firing at.
And loosely hold the gun.
Yeah.
Loosely hold the gun. She holds it in like, you know, the professional two-handed grip, but then she turns it sideways most of the time.
And lets it jump around in between like her hands as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know, these are fake guns, clearly, but I mean, she's like having a hard time shooting the fake gun.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
How did the FBI give her a gun?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
You have to pass like certain, like, sure, you have
but
to like...
there's
like,
no, like... training for how to shoot guns flirtatiously, which is what she's doing for the movie.
Yeah, you know,
there's a lot of flirtatious shooting.
Shoot to kill, yes. Shoot to seduce, you're on your own.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I mean, the movie's called Hollow Point, but really, it the bullets aren't hollow points. They're like falcon punch fists. People get shot. They go flying. Tia Carrera is then shot by Max because they both got vests on, you know.
All the time.
Because, you know,
most
it's always the joke. Like, oh, I knew you were wearing a vest. But he, you know, has to return the favor and shoots her in the stomach because, you know, that's clever. Because
he knew she was wearing a vest, too.
And she, like, flies back into this fence, like, cracking the fence. It's by far the most ridiculous scene.
Yeah, this is like
scene.
Mortal Kombat style, like, punch in the stomach and fly 10 feet backwards.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And you know what? I can't believe none of us mentioned the end scene where they're outside of the warehouse after everybody's dead, but there are no bodies anymore.
Uh-huh.
Tia Carrera is just kind of pacing around, walking in circles, and Max is trying to be like, you know, you want to be with me, and she's like, you've been married 6 times before. She's like, you've been married like once forever, like 5.6 years, and that's from birth. Like, you know, she's giving a lot of good reasons why they shouldn't be together.
Yeah.
And so he just grabs her and kisses her, and they have a tender moment, and then she's like, is that a vest that I'm feeling? And he's like, against your gun. And so then they double cross each other like one last time, and they shoot at each other playfully.
You're a regular Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Yes.
And playfully each other's legs
multiple times.
It's another dance shooting at your foot type of thing.
Dance, you varmint.
They're deranged.
Rascally
they're deranged
rabbit.
People
In fact, this whole movie is like just a send up to Looney Tunes. I mean, Donald Sutherland is basically just Bugs Bunny.
It's a Warner Brothers production.
He even eats carrots throughout.
Carrots. He's eating carrots throughout.
He comes up from under like a manhole.
And not only that, but he hops up.
His head pops up and then the thing lands on his head and he pops down again.
I think he even did like a circle.
He did do a circle.
I'm surprised there weren't birds flying over his head to show that he'd been conked silly.
Oh, ridiculous.
Also from the Looney Tunes angle, there was, like, during the climactic scene in the warehouse, which a climactic scene has to be in a warehouse. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, outside, you know, the Chinese and the Italians and the Russians show up, and they all just start shooting. And for the next, like, 10 minutes, you just hear gunshots in the background.
Yeah.
You don't see anybody shooting.
No.
You don't see any evidence of anybody dying or getting shot. You just hear the shooting in the background.
Yeah, it's
kind of hilarious.
This movie did a lot of things for me. I think it did a lot of things for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing that it did not do is pass the Bechdel test.
What?
It could have barely, maybe barely, but only because of that very short scene where Tia Carrera and her friend...
Vicky.
This is true.
I think they're talking about work.
Yeah,
but
they were saying, like, Tia Carrera, you take your job too seriously.
But it's about... like 5 seconds of the movie.
Yeah.
And then that friend is dead within 5 minutes of like being
They
abused.
Didn't talk about a man. And
by the way, her murder is never avenged or explained.
That is so barely passing the Bechdel test. That is like the very bare minimum.
We'll say it's within the margin of error.
Yes. I really feel weird saying that it passes because it really shouldn't.
It does.
On a technicality, it does.
And what was your least favorite moment?
My worst moment was when Tia Carrera is... convincing the Italian mob leader that he's being double-crossed by the rest of the mob.
Uh-huh.
And she's talking to him in his restaurant with his, like, mom or
some sort of broad
wife there.
This is the scene where all three of them are trying to worm the way into the three different mafias and convince them that
they're
they shouldn't trust each
double,
other.
Trying to double-cross, make everybody
they're triple-crossing.
Yeah, triple-crossing.
So she's trying to seduce the Italian.
But she's talking to him, and he's saying basically he's going to kill her or something, and then he tells her, like, close up, like, it's the creepiest line. He's like,
when I finish with you, They'll never find your delicious body.
There's no reason for that wording.
No. And then they cut
just disgusting.
And then it cuts straight to Donald Sutherland in a sauna with the Russians, who are all just wearing towels and shoulder
guns.
Holsters.
And guns. Yeah.
And he says, towels well, you can trust me. If you want, I'll stick a LoJack up my ass. I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah. LoJack does feature very prominently in this movie.
Yes.
Which I don't know if it was just invented or released to the public or something, but they were strongly selling LoJack.
Yeah, so my least favorite moment was probably the comic relief with the different multicultural gangsters.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of good comic relief in this movie, but those guys are more are like Three Stooges level characterization of the Italians and the Chinese. There's this one scene where they're on a golf course together.
Yeah.
There's one guy is wearing like a tiny, tiny fisherman's hat. Like that is just too goofy even for this
movie. Was it John Lithgow doing the
that was the scene
Samuel Jackson?
Yeah, that was the scene where John Lithgow
was wearing the Kangol hat.
All white jumpsuit and the Kangol hat.
Yeah, he just borrowed from Samuel Jackson's wardrobe that day.
I think Samuel Jackson hadn't started wearing those constantly yet.
Oh,
but
snap.
I think he had.
I mean, this was almost 20 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know. When did Jackie Brown come out?
Actually, I was going to say, that probably would have been pretty close.
That was right around the time that I think he started rocking that pretty hardcore.
Yeah, because that is his uniform through the whole movie,
Exactly.
So this was originally written as a
god-awful ponytail.
Jackie Brown crossover with the Odell character, and then that just got turned into John Lithgow.
What Mike failed to mention during that whole golf scene was that they take the 97 version of a selfie. They all get together and start hugging, and some guy gets down with a camera and just takes the pictures of these gangsters holding guns.
Yeah.
Because John Lithgow was talking about how, like, you guys keep arguing with each other. I arrange all these activities for you.
Yeah,
and
you know,
just
a gangster
can't
fun
get
day.
Along.
Yeah.
You're supposed to have fun, guys.
And this is after they all brought out their guns and, had, like, a little, like, gunfight.
Yeah, all the guns were,
again,
in golf bags.
Yeah.
Which, again, this is all taking place on an active golf course. There are people around.
Broad daylight.
And they're just pulling out AK-47s and brandishing them at each other. Yeah,
and shotguns and Uzis.
And again, the people of Boston are just like, I've seen it before.
Yeah, no big deal. Come down to Southie, buddy. So my least favorite moment was like the shooting technique. It wasn't so much that it was my least favorite. It was just so damn annoying to watch. It took the whole farcity of the whole movie like to a whole different level.
Yeah.
It's like at least you're a trained professional. Take a little bit of dignity in your line of work. But yeah, it was just one of those things that was just like annoyed me. So other than that, I mean, it was so ridiculous that I couldn't really hate too much on it because you can't take any of it seriously. It was just so bizarre.
Because it was fantasy.
Yeah,
it was
just
a weird fantasy action thriller. Yeah.
The most annoying part of the movie.
Practically.
Yeah, rom-com.
Yeah, so the sad morphine backstory was also annoying. And so was the Vietnam backstory. And so was the Vietnam backstory.
That was worthless.
Yeah, that was
all worthless.
That was all nonsense.
Everything with the Russian dude was all worthless, too. Even though it was funny, all the mystery.
Even when he fell out of the back of the car in a casket?
It was funny, but it was worthless to the story.
Well, I mean, even the very beginning where he decides, you know, he's realizes he's being arrested at his son's wedding. So he decides to dive into a stranger's car.
Yeah.
Only to realize this guy is also trying to arrest him.
It's
why would he just get into the stranger's car?
Yeah, that was great. Yeah, because when he jumped in the car,
he could just run away.
He trusted Max for a second, and then Max said, "Put him up. You're under arrest again."
And then he just gets out of the car and leaves.
He's just walking away. Like Mr. Magoo style. He's like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
That's how a lot
just
of
walking
people
around avoiding.
That's how a lot of people get out of like their situations, is they just walk out of the scene.
And what are you going to do, shoot him?
Yeah.
No, I guess I'll say, like, as we're talking about ineffective cops, my least favorite moment is, actually, it's my least favorite aspect, is just the inactivity of everyone who seems to live in Boston at this time. Because, like we said, this movie, there's almost no part of it that takes place at night. Everything that happens is broad daylight. There are people on the streets. There are extras just walking around. Cops who are supposedly doing their jobs. People fire guns in strip club parking lots, and no one gets called. No one comes. They sit there for 10 minutes. They shoot each other. No cops get called, ever. Yeah. The only time the cops actually get called is Tia Carrera's character is going to finally pin down Max and Donald Sutherland's character in this diner. They show up.
The cops
they draw
up.
Guns. And then they leave.
Yeah.
Yep.
Don't even
they
just
don't
like,
arrest the guy.
They're just Tia S. Carrera's escorts.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. They're just like, you got what you need, right? All right, we're going.
We actually need
we're basically Ronins now because the police force has now been disbanded.
Yeah.
Never forget.
Yeah, there's a lot of just, like, in a real sort of, like, cop action movie, there would be at least a scene where Tia Carrere was brought in to her chief or whoever, her supervisor. Yeah. And maybe, I think this probably would have been better if she was chewed out for her first, you know, incident because she failed.
Yeah.
And she went rogue then to do this on her own, to prove something. Yeah. That would have made more sense.
And there was the one, I guess it was the chief, I don't know what, the FBI guys. And he basically just told her to go on a vacation.
Yeah, he like told her, he's like,
Go to Greenland, I think he says.
Yeah, he doesn't call her a loose cannon. He calls her a sweetheart.
Yes,
yeah.
Sweetheart, which is really offensive to her. Yeah.
And then we never see him again. She's just on her own.
Yeah.
And that actor is also god-awful because he says something to the effect of, well, sometimes you get them, and sometimes you don't get the one you want to get. So, so see you, sweetheart. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And that was not an exaggeration. That was pretty much how it went down.
That's pretty verbatim. Yeah. You know?
Oh, and I'm looking up the guy who played her boss here, and it's actually a guy named Vlasta Vrana, who was
the Russian guy in the movie.
Yeah,
and apparently he was that incompetent police chief in Secret Window. Anyone see Secret Window?
Yes. What was that?
Like when he goes to the police, and the police are like, "We don't have crimes in this town. I can't help you. We've never had a crime before.
Johnny
just go home."
As a writer,
we don't have
the Johnny Depp.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
I think we're still doing this spectrum
spectators.
Of movies, right?
Yeah, spectator spectrum.
Wait. There's one thing
our
that we didn't forget.
Phrase.
Yeah. And can't believe we forgot it.
Oh, no.
Because it is the best part of the warehouse scene.
Yeah.
Oh.
Tia Carrera.
The very long warehouse scene.
Yeah. The very long extended 90s action movie warehouse scene. They try to do the action so well, and then every now and then they're just like, wait, this will be hilarious. Let's do it.
Yeah.
So there's a scene where Tia Carrera is trying to get into the warehouse, because this is where all the money is.
That's right. The garage door is going down.
Yeah, the gangsters go in, the garage door is coming down, and Tia Carrera is the super awesome FBI agent. She just rolls under there.
Yeah.
And
she tucks and rolls, does it.
Max Parrish just... It doesn't even make sense. The door is almost to the ground now. Yet, instead of even trying to get under it, he just runs at it and just jumps up into the
jumps
door.
Up.
And just bounces.
Bonks, he bonks off the door, and he does a pretty good roll away from the door.
Yeah.
And then, have you ever seen a cat do something stupid, and they kind of look around like, holy shit, did anyone see me? Oh, I guess I'm good.
Like,
he does
that just
and then walks off scene.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't actually part of the movie, and the guys did it. We're like, hey, you know what? No, I'm
what's
keep it
what's
in.
Great
keep it
because there's a rule of three in comedy. So he makes a second attempt to get through the door, but it's in this rail car.
This little tiny yellow rail car.
Slow moving rail car. Super slow moving. And so he's coming up towards it, and he's like amping himself up. He's like, yeah, I'm going to go through this.
I'm going to do it.
And no, he just
at least that dents the door.
Yeah,
it was like that scene in that Futurama episode where they go to the big warehouse of all the bureaucracy files.
Yeah,
and this guy is driving this little vehicle, and he like shouts no for like 15 seconds as he's traveling like 1 mile an hour, and then just bumps into a box of papers.
Yeah, there was an amazing comedic effect in that end scene.
And the third time. For the comedic effect.
Yeah.
He steals a police car by hitting the cop in the back of the neck.
Yeah. Again, because police officers are just
revs up
ineffectual people.
The police car and crashes it into the door, and there's a massive explosion.
Gigantic.
Humongous. I mean, it's probably the second biggest explosion in the movie.
So, guys, why do you think that driving a police car into the door of a warehouse causes a massive explosion? And for that matter, why did it cause the police car to roll over?
Yeah, because it was
going
fast.
Yeah, it tunneled it. It just like a football. Like, you know, like it just...
Like a hit or ramp.
It had spin on it. Like, it had spin like a football or like, you know...
Like a spiral.
The only explanation would be that it was fired out of a cannon that shoots police cars in sort of a spiral fashion.
Well, actually, people just kind of punch with that same force. So probably one of the bad guys outside just like punched the back of the car.
Like punched the fuel tank.
Maybe
sparked it with like his just gruff.
Yeah, this is
like,
kind of
knuckles.
This is set in a parallel universe where Earth has less gravity and more oxygen in the air because the explosions are so massive.
The only logical thing I can think is if there's like grenades hidden in the sirens or maybe in the back seat or something.
Maybe that cop has some like breathing problems and so he had an oxygen tank in the vehicle too.
Yeah.
So maybe
I mean, come on, guys.
A perfect storm.
This is always a staple of many action movies. Everyone is unbelievably easy to knock unconscious. Yeah. I mean, like just a simple tap to the face is just
like Tia Carrere is a better fighter than Mike Tyson. She has more knockouts than Mike Tyson had.
She's
in
got
rear.
Like one punch and dynamos in those fists.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and actually just real quick, if you enjoyed Pineapple Express, I'm fairly sure they lifted their end scene where
the tender love ballad?
Where Danny McBride kills a guy with his Denali
with a
Daewoo. That That's basically lifted from this end scene. I'm yeah. sure of it.
Because, except Donald Sutherland's a little bit more crafty and gets away from getting
yeah.
run over.
Yeah,
oh, you know, he's
Donald
in the sewer
Sutherland,
system at this
yeah.
point,
yeah.
poking his head up like a criminal.
Exactly. He comes up from the sewer system with a gun into John Lithgow's crotch, which
yes.
is amazing. And he's like, I can
great.
Do
yeah.
a very good Jerry yeah. Lee Lewis impression.
Yeah.
I can give you gray balls of fire with a gun up to it, yeah, like a 12
was,
gauge.
That was my least. That was my second least favorite comic relief.
I think third from that is when he eventually corners John Lithgow again with the shock, and he just says, well, the proctologist is in.
Yeah.
What was that gun? The sight had like three lenses on it. Like the sight was like a third the size of the gun.
Oh, God. Yeah, I do remember it. I don't know what it was, but it shot as inaccurately as everything else,
yeah.
apparently.
Yeah. Oh,
real,
well.
Yeah, I have no idea what was with that gun. That
yeah,
was
that
really
was,
strange.
That was bizarre.
So, Daryl, tell me, where did this movie fall onto your spectrum?
Yes, the spectator spectrum.
The spectator spectrum.
We're going to try it for a second time, and we're going to fit this movie into our rankings that we've previously established.
Yes.
Well, it exploded my rankings. It rocketed its way to the top with a Tia Carrera Falcon punch to the top. It was great. This movie is it's mm-hmm. excellent. I usually don't necessarily like, you know, we watch the movies so you don't have to.
Yeah.
But I recommend watching this movie because Donald Sutherland is hilarious. It is like watching a Bugs Bunny cartoon, just yeah. like live-action Donald Sutherland. It's hilarious.
And I like to think that you know, this is his character from The Italian Job, like a couple years later after he's entered the early stages of dementia, where he's just walking around as happy as a clam. He can't remember any of the troubles in his life.
We should totally set up a list of movies where, like, we can make, like, a string. And
the Sutherland scale of
yeah, yeah.
insanity.
Like, where this is where in real life, this is where he starts, and then this is where he ends up.
I've never seen him goofy at all in a movie before.
Yeah.
So this is a rare treat.
This is the first.
Yeah.
What about you?
Mine, I had a hard time because while it was very entertaining and it was fun to watch, I had a hard time putting it above Final Mission. And even Society, just because Society was so bizarre that I have to give it, like, the originality points over this one.
Mm.
So I'm going to tuck it right underneath Society and above the Mick Jagger movie, which I'm forgetting that
Running out of luck.
Running out of luck.
Yep.
So while I would love to put it higher, and it'll probably stay higher over the long run.
It's a top-tier movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Final Mission was so crazy, and Society was just...
7700.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, no.
Don't cut yourself. No.
Yeah. The originality of those just like...
Stop pointing that gum at the camera.
These, and that's... Yeah. I'm going to throw them the originality points, and this one was a little jaded and kind of run-of-the-mill.
Understandable.
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, Mike?
Okay. Well, this goes straight to the top of the spectator spectrum. I love this movie. I've seen it once before. I've been pushing to watch this since, like, episode 2.
Yep. He has been pushing this one. This was, like, the second one, like, after our original one. He's like, we should watch this next, and we've just kind of not.
Well, our first thing we wanted to watch was No One Would Tell. And I think we've completely forgotten about that completely.
Oh, yeah. I should probably bring that in.
Coming soon.
Oh, no,
yeah.
No one
so,
will tell.
Yeah, so this movie, but this movie has everything I want in an action movie. It has it combines the stupidity of the Lethal Weapon style movie with the stupidity of the Pulp Fiction style movie. It has giant explosions. It has a scene where criminals are on a golf course together, which is always good. It has the requisite scene where the crime lord is at some sort of awards banquet being recognized for his amazing philanthropic efforts, which is always good.
I forgot about that.
That's probably the best scene like that outside of Action Jackson.
Yeah.
So, I feel like they probably let John Lithgow keep the crown they
made. Yeah, he got a crown. They gave him a crown.
Yeah, well, I think
that's the best purple crown.
That is the best prop we've seen since the book with leather bound Larry Miller's face on the cover.
It was like a top hat crown. It had height on it.
Yeah,
I think it was a model of the crown that the King of England is supposed to wear.
And I think the crown was actually for the island that they bought because they were starting that nation.
Well, that's what that was.
I think that's it. Because
he was
becoming
the king
of this island nation.
Well, I guess if you're going to make a nation, why be president when you can just be king?
When you're going to own Pan Am, you need a sweet crown.
Yeah. So Society is no longer at the top of my list. That movie has a lot of awkward moments that I didn't enjoy watching, so I'd rather rewatch this one.
Yeah, and for me, this movie did something that I didn't think was possible, and that's knock Larry Miller's performance in Frozen Assets away. Is like Larry Miller on 10.
Yeah, I have to say, if Larry Miller played, Larry Miller would cross.
Yeah, he just got double crossed.
If he was playing Donald Sutherland's character, he would not have been as good as Donald Sutherland was.
Oh,
no. And Donald Sutherland, he made this movie, but everything about this movie was so incredibly entertaining. And I'm usually not an action person, but all the way through it, it was just on every level, it was just the right amount of ridiculous, the right amount of like just bad plot. the right amount of like Donald Sutherland.
I think it was there might have been a little too much of Donald Sutherland.
No. I don't think you could have too much of Donald Sutherland. Not this character.
What do you think of
I would watch him do anything.
Yeah, I'd watch him brush his teeth.
Yeah, I would watch him take a dump right next to his.
That's right. His
in the middle of an open. That's
another thing
bathroom.
We didn't mention about Donald Sutherland. His apartment, there's a bathtub and a toilet right in the middle of the living room.
Yeah, he had a giant loft apartment, and it was just very open.
In
there
his defense,
no
as he says,
anything.
He lives alone.
This is true.
You know.
Yeah, what do you care?
It doesn't matter.
Another thing is that he dresses like a stand-up comedian throughout the movie.
Yes.
He's got this jacket that looks like it's made of couch upholstery, and he's wearing these solid-colored button-down shirts buttoned all the way to the top. Very Jerry Seinfeld style. Yeah, and sneakers.
And
he's
sneakers.
Like, he's like the character from The Mask, but without the mask.
Yes.
He's just normal person as the mask.
But this movie is all the way up top for me. Like, I couldn't get enough of this movie.
Right,
I would recommend this movie to really any movie watcher. Like, you wouldn't even have to necessarily like bad movies. It's just enjoyable.
No. I don't know. I think you'd have to enjoy it. You'd have to go into it with a little bit of like lightheartedness or something. If you tell someone, watch this movie, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
As long as they're not expecting a Citizen Kane, I think you can get some kind of mild enjoyment out of even... Even a casual movie goer. Yeah.
Like, as long as I don't tell them, hey, this is basically the next Pulp Fiction.
It's better than all those Pulp Fiction knockoffs that actually went to theaters, like Suicide Kings. That movie was just depressing.
God, that was an awful movie.
Well, here's the thing. Like, if you were to just be flipping through the channels and you landed on this, would you stop? Because I don't know if I would. I would be like, this is ridiculous, and I just keep going.
I might watch it because I do have, like, a really weird... like slight obsession with Tia Carrere's career.
Okay.
Tia Carrere.
Tia Carrere.
Well, that consisted of Wayne's World, this movie, and the Relic Hunter TV show, right? Is there anything else?
No, she did she did some D-list celebrity. I think it was Dancing with the Stars or something.
Yeah. I feel like she's been in something.
She's been in some things, but she's had like such a low-key career, and Wayne's World was such a big movie for my childhood, and I like thought of the world of her.
Yeah, she's on like a pedestal.
Yes, and I was like, why isn't she in more things?
She was the best rock singer ever.
No, she wasn't bad. So
she had good timing. Like, she should have been doing more
comedies. If I saw her in a movie, like if I was flipping through, I'm like, fuck, that's Tia Carrere movie. I'd be like, I'm watching this because I need to watch Tia Carrere's like movies.
So if you want to see her as a hard as nails butch lady cop, this is your movie.
And since we didn't talk about it, the ending for John Lithgow, can we just
you said this was very similar to some other movie, didn't you?
John Lithgow ends up dying, or so we assume,
in a really strange Mexican standoff.
So there's a really weird scene where there's a Mexican standoff, and they're all explaining they're explaining their paranoia. Basically, John Lithgow's like, you can't do this because you're doing this, and thinking that.
Yeah, he actually starts explaining like deconstructing the concept of a Mexican standoff.
Have you guys
he's like, interesting.
If I point my gun at you, you'll point your gun at me. So instead, I should point my gun over there.
Yeah,
doesn't that make sense to everybody?
Yeah, if you've seen like Key and Peele's Mexican standoff.
Oh, really? There's a sketch like that?
We should watch it. There's a sketch like that, and it's like theirs is a little bit crazier than Key and Peele's. And Key and Peele's ends in like a. I'm not going to ruin it for you, Mike. But
nobody. Does anybody get a container dropped on their head?
No. It's better. So basically, while this is happening, I don't know who's operating this. One of the storage containers.
Oh, it's containers.
Tia Carrere.
Tia Carrere was like,
she flips
I'm
the switch.
She flips the switch for this
shipping container.
Overhead crane.
On an overhead crane, probably like a magnet thing going on that makes no noise.
No,
it's absolutely silent.
I can say
there was a
I've worked around these things before. They are loud as shit.
Yes. Like, so people have to wear usually like ear protect.
Yes, they make them loud so that you don't just stand under them and let them fall.
Yeah,
so John Lithgow was so invested in his weird speech about togetherness and
classic
brotherhood and how to balance out good and evil that he wouldn't have noticed the shipping container going over his head anyway.
He's a very spiritual gangster.
Yeah, and it falls on him, and then John Lithgow becomes John Squishgow.
Oh! Nailed it.
He gets crushed by a shipping container of the fakest fake money I've ever seen.
Oh,
I understand why they had such a hard time laundering their money.
Yeah.
Because they'd go like, hey, I want to launder this money. Like, well, you've got to give me some fucking money first.
They went to fucking Kinko's.
It was white on like gray, basically.
These are cut up laundry bags.
Black and white copies.
Yeah.
Monopoly money would have been more believable. At least one of the bills is green.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awful money, but an awesome movie.
And here at Forgotten Failures, we would actually like to call on Donald Sutherland and Larry Miller to come together and make Hollow Point 2, Frozen Assets.
What?
I want to see a combination of these movies.
Yeah, because instead of a money truck, the sperm truck. Donald Sutherland drives the sperm truck off at the end.
Oh, yeah.
They can't launder their sperm.
I think they should team up, you know, and they should crush the other three gangsters.
We have to own our own. We have to run our own country before we can launder the sperm.
And we need to populate that country, so we need lots of sperm donors.
And Larry Miller and Donald Sutherland are just competing crazies. Like, they just get crazier and crazier, just amp it up. But, like, Larry Miller's, like, the good crazy. He's, like, the chaotic good.
Yeah.
And Donald Sutherland's the chaotic evil. And then it just gets crazy and crazier.
And Larry Miller's mom meets Donald Sutherland's mom. Just imagine who she is.
Yeah.
Elaine Stritch? I think so. The late Elaine Stritch. R.I.P.
By the way, it should be mentioned that Donald Sutherland murdered a woman and then stole a truckload of cash, and nothing ever happened from that.
He's a good assassin.
These are the worst cops ever. Yeah. They kill the gang leader person who has apparently committed some crimes, but the one person who's actually committed, like, two on-screen crimes is the only person who gets away, and they let him get away.
Yeah, but he's such a rascal. Yeah.
He is. He's a rascal.
I actually would have been disappointed if they had arrested him. I just think it is.
Well, they tried. Though. He just keeps getting away.
He just keeps walking away. Yeah.
He just keeps walking. Literally walking away.
Sidling away.
Yep.
Sidling.
Oh, you can't stop me. I'll just walk that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is so sneaky.
This movie.
Oh, it's ridiculous. Great.
Good God! You know I'm about to give up on the three of you.
Oh, come on.
No, I mean it. I've done everything I can to bring you together. Group activities. Quality time does absolutely no good.
Just because we argue all the time doesn't mean we don't like each other. Ah!
Of course, we love each other. Yeah. We love each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Amore, amore.